WFED, Washington. WWFD, Frederick. Worldwide on federalnewsradio.com. And your source for federal news now.
It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth and I'm going to be hosting Fed Talk today. And today is a very unusual day here at Fed Talk because we have two employee associations from a different branch of government. For you, our listeners who listen to us faithfully and follow us on the internet, you know that we're very focused on bringing our listeners information about what's going on in the executive branch of the government where most federal employees reside. That statistic is around 1.92 million federal employees in the executive branch, and we spend a lot of time talking about issues in the executive branch of government. But today, unusual day, we have two associations joining us today. Neither association has been on our show before, so I want to welcome both. And they're both from the Article III branch of government, the judiciary. And we're going to spend the first half hour speaking with John Benzunas, who's the legislative liaison for the Federal Probation and Pretrial Officers Association. And John's joining us today by phone. And this is John's first time on our show. It's the first time that the Federal Probation and Pretrial Officers Association, which is such a mouthful. I don't know how to abbreviate it, but it is a mouthful. John's going to tell us a lot about the association, a lot about what the work of these officers do. But I also want our listeners to know that I'm delighted to have in the studio with me Tony Vernetti, who is the president of Federal Employee Defense Services, which is a company that provides liability insurance to federal employees. And many of our listeners probably know that Tony used to also be an attorney at our law firm, so it's nice to have Tony back with us.
Good morning, Debbie. Thanks for having me on the show.
And Tony's going to join us because these are two associations with federal employees, and Tony's obviously providing support services to feds and is also going to be a sponsor at the conference for the Pretrial and Probation Officers Association. So we're probably going to learn a lot about Article III work today, and we're going to send our listeners to their website. And if you type into any internet, I'm sure, you know, I don't want to say which one, but if you type it into a search engine, Federal Probation and Pretrial Officers Association, and you want to learn more about the association, who they are and what they do, you certainly can go on the internet. And they're made up of officers, probation officers and pretrial officers who work in the judiciary dealing with individuals who are being put through the criminal justice system. And by their names, probation and pretrial officers, it's pretty obvious the work they do. John is their legislative liaison. And like the executive branch, which is going through, everybody knows they're going through serious budget discussions, which are going to affect federal employee compensation issues, those same issues are facing the judiciary. So, John, you there?
Yeah, it's our pleasure to be here.
So, John, tell us about your association, who your members are, and what's the work they do?
Yeah, FPPOA is a group of federal probation and pretrial officers. We established the professional association back in 1955, and we're the only professional association that works solely on behalf of officers and staff employed by Federal Probation and Pretrial Services. We help provide leadership and representation on a number of different issues, ranging from officer safety issues, wellness issues, and really any policy that impacts probation or pretrial services officers.
Is there a difference between a probation officer and a pretrial services officer, or are they both the same?
There's a big difference, actually.
Okay.
Between the two agencies, we basically are involved in the criminal justice process from the day a person is arrested until the time they are released from post-conviction supervision. And we're, each agency is broken into two different components, a supervision component and an investigation component. With respect to pretrial,
which comes first. That's the work that comes first in the process, in the system.
Absolutely. So the day a person is arrested, they're going to be appearing before a federal judge. And the decision that judge has to make is whether or not they're going to be released or kept in jail pending further proceedings. It's obviously a very important junction in the process. And a pretrial services officer steps in and conducts an initial investigation for the judge to determine, you know, whether or not it's appropriate for that person to be released in the community. And if it is appropriate, then the pretrial services office also supervises that individual. And of course, at that stage in the process, the person has retains the presumption of innocence. So while on supervision, it's kind of a less onerous set of restrictions that are imposed upon them. And on the probation side, the investigations officers perform a critical function in the criminal justice process by assisting judges in the sentencing process. We complete what's called a pre-sentence investigation that...
This is, John, that's after conviction.
Yes, this is after conviction.
After conviction.
After a trial, or after someone's convicted of trial.
Or pleads, right.
Correct. We come into the process and conduct a comprehensive investigation for the judge. And it's important to remember that well over 90% of all cases that come into the system end in guilty pleas. So the judges really don't have all that much information about an individual defendant. So we come in and provide information to the judge about the offense, their criminal background.
These are the probation officers?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Probation officers. And all their personal characteristics, substance abuse history, mental health history, employment history. So the judge, by the time they get the case for sentencing, they're able to see a complete person, and it really individualizes the criminal justice process.
So, John, at what point during, this is Tony Vernetti here, at what point during the process does it, I guess, switch from the one agency to the other, from the pretrial to the probation? Is it once the trial starts, or is it after there's a disposition?
It's after there's a disposition. There's a little bit of overlap. Even when someone pleads guilty or is convicted, they still could be under pretrial supervision. So it's mainly after sentencing. The probation component, the supervision component of probation, occurs either after a person is sentenced and is placed directly into the community on probation, or serves a jail sentence and is released back in the community on supervised release. And that is definitely a more onerous form of supervision than the pretrial. And our officers range in a variety of different specialties, from drug treatment specialists to mental health specialists, people that perform location monitoring, which is like the GPS system, home confinement, and people that even specialize in sex offenders and gangs even.
I'm sure there's a very good public policy reason as to why you separate the two functions into two separate directorates or agencies.
Right, that's what I wanted to
clarify. But it doesn't jump out at me right now.
I wanted clarification, John. There are two separate agencies. One's pretrial services agency and the other's probation.
Well, it's interesting. In some jurisdictions, in all the 96 different districts, it's different. Some agencies are separate. So New York Southern, for instance, has its own separate pretrial services office and a separate probation office. In the district that I'm in, Vermont, it's all combined. They're separated because the main thing is the presumption of innocence on the pretrial side.
Right.
We call it least restrictive supervision. And on the probation side, it's like I said before, it's a lot more onerous that the presumption of innocence is lost.
There's been a decision.
Exactly.
Right. And I think the other point you made that I'd want our listeners to appreciate, it sounds like that the employment is actually with each individual district in each individual court. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, we have a national system. It's all under the administrative offices of the U.S. courts in Washington. But like I said, there's 94 different districts, and it's a national system. But there's a lot of discretion locally in terms of how we conduct our business.
Right, and things can be done a little bit different. Having a little bit of experience in helping some of your officers deal with employee issues you know, I've noticed, you know, that there are differences throughout the country.
Yeah, there's discretion by each jurisdiction. And we should clarify, John, when you say districts, we're talking about judicial districts where a federal court is located.
Correct.
And it's already predetermined. People can go on the internet. It's been predetermined. I don't know for how many decades these jurisdictions have already, the lines have been drawn. In some states where there are very small populations, it's one judicial district. John, you gave the example of New York. There are Southern District, Northern District, Eastern District, Western District.
Yep.
And each district, as I understand what you're saying, has where the judges sit in each district, they have their own discretion to run their services, both pretrial and probation.
That's correct.
So you need to hang on the line, John, and not hang up on us. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to learn more about your association and particularly the work you're doing for your members. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees, GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and I'm the host this morning. Along with me, actually, I'm co-hosting this morning with Tony Vernetti of Federal Employee Defense Services. Tony's a veteran of our show. He used to host our show when he was with us at the law firm. And as I explained to our listeners, today's Article 3 Day at Fed Talk. We have two employee associations, and they're federal employees. You know, the judiciary is a branch of the federal government. And with us on the phone is John Benzunas, who is the legislative liaison for the Federal Probation and Pretrial Officers Association. And hopefully, John, you're still there.
I think I am.
Okay, John. We were talking about the work of your officers and how it differs from pretrial to probation, that you sit in, what is it, 96 districts?
That's correct. 94.
94. I'm sorry, 94 districts. They match where federal courts sit. And we know that you're the legislative liaison, and as I had said to our listeners while we were having technical difficulty, your branch of government is experiencing the very same sort of pay issues, compensation issues that the executive branch is facing. And as legislative liaison, can you give a rundown for those listeners who would be either members of your association or potential members? Can you give us a rundown of what those legislative issues are and where they stand?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest thing that we're facing right now is, and this was actually happening before members of Congress were talking about cutting the budget even, back in fiscal year 2011, the courts implemented its own performance-based system of performance management. And essentially, it was a self-imposed cost containment initiative that the courts imposed that seeks to achieve, I think it's just under 1% of payroll savings. And essentially, what the system does is it limits the amount of step increases that a court unit executive can grant spread around their staff. And they also took our pay table and actually decreased the grades so that the increases within the grades themselves have been reduced.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've...
That's a proposal or that's already occurred?
That has been implemented. It's in the process of being implemented right now. It's the first year, and you know, we've expressed our concern to the judicial conference about how this is going to affect our officers in a number of ways. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about before, there's 94 different districts, so there's going to be 94 different ways that this program is potentially going to be implemented. And we're really concerned about fairness, first of all, mm-hmm. Because we want a probation officer in Maine to be treated the same as a pretrial services officer in the Central District of California, and we're really concerned about that.
John, is this new program being run as a project or like a demonstration project? Does it have a term to it, or was it just you know, turned loose to run?
Well, the administrative offices of the U.S. courts have titled the system a pay for contribution.
Right.
But essentially, it's a way to save money, and they're trying to make a demonstration of fiscal responsibility to Congress.
So most pay for performance projects that come in, they're done for a period of time so that they can measure the results, and then they decide whether they're going to extend them or, you know, or like a DOD
sunset,
go back to
yeah.
the old system. Is do you know is that the way this one's being run?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, this is the system, and this is the system we're going to have for the foreseeable future.
And the obvious concern when you say fairness is if you have 94 districts, you don't want districts where the pay system is viewed to be more onerous. You don't want your officers fleeing that for the more, the districts that are more generous. And then there's always that tension, John, between, you know, overall consistency, you know, nationwide, and letting individual offices sort of, quote unquote, meet the needs of their office. It'll be very interesting to see what the results are in morale and staffing.
And another thing that we're concerned about is how this is going to impact new officers, because we now have new officers that are coming into the system that are not going to receive step increases that they would previously be entitled to. And when you look at the foregone income that they would experience over the course of a 25-30-year career, it's significant money lost for a lifetime.
Do you have a sense of how many officers are both in, you know, pretrial and probation? What's your overall number? Nationwide.
I'm not exactly sure what the overall number is, but I think it's somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 maybe, but I'm not exactly sure what the exact number is.
So for people who are in those kinds of positions and might be interested in joining your association, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, they go to our website, fppoa.org. It's a website that we recently revamped, and we're very excited about it. And you just click on there's a membership tab, and you just follow the instructions. And it's important to know that anybody can be a member of FPPOA as long as they're employed within federal probation or pretrial services. We have two different levels of membership. The active member is a $40 a year membership. I consider that to be very reasonable.
Very reasonable.
And that's for probation officers, pretrial officers, and officer assistants. And the other level of membership is for support staff, and that's $20 a year. Again, very, very reasonable.
And, of course, one of the biggest thing you offer your members is the National Training Institute, which I think it's an annual event, right?
Yeah, it's usually every other year.
Oh, every other year.
Yep.
And it is this year, right? It's in April.
Yep, it's we're having it in Atlanta, Georgia. It's from April 10th to the 13th. And it's $225 registration fee if you're a member, and $275 if you are a non-member.
And the agenda's on your website, but I thought it would be a good opportunity for our listeners, for people who are listening, somebody who might be interested in attending. It's really quite interesting what you've got packed into, 3 days, 2 days?
Yeah, it's a Sunday through a Wednesday, so 4 days. And I tell you, we're so enthusiastic about the program that we put together, although it's tempered a little bit by the fact that we're still in a continuing resolution, and we do have some concerns about the budget. But, we want to convince chief probation and pretrial services officers that it's a great training, and it's worthwhile to still send your officers, even in this cloudy budget environment.
Can you give us a rundown of what you have planned for the training event?
Yeah, one of the things that we're doing that we're really excited about is recognizing the 25th anniversary of the death of Thomas Gaul. He's the only U.S. probation or pretrial services officer that has ever been killed in the line of duty.
Mm.
We've been an agency established in 1925, and when you look at the losses that have been suffered by other law enforcement agencies, I mean, last year alone there was 160 officers killed in the line of duty. A few weeks ago there was a deputy marshal that was in the line of duty.
Two of them were injured. One was killed.
Absolutely, and we consider ourselves so fortunate that we have only lost one officer. So to recognize Tom Gaul's death, we've put together a video featuring Tom's wife Nancy and his two children Nicholas and Christopher, who talk a little bit about their experiences with pretrial services and probation, and Tom's legacy within the system. If you talk to any officer around the country, they know who Tom is, and his death really kind of galvanized the system in making serious improvements to officer safety training, and it actually led, I think, to the establishment of the National Training Academy that we have in South Carolina, where new officers go and undergo 6 weeks of training, and they're also responsible for certifying officer safety trainers and firearms instructors. And several of us on the national board have been through that program, and the work they do is fantastic. Mm. And they really, every day they work hard to carry on Tom's legacy and make officers safe in the field.
John, what else can you, I guess, tell us about whether the coursework or workshops you're going to have down there? That's going to, you talked about you're speaking to the chiefs out there to let their people, attend this conference. So that's going to be good for their professional development. I will think one of the selling points would be, hey, let me go to this conference. I'm going to learn, all this stuff. I'm going to come back and I'm going to be a better officer because of it. What can you tell us about some of the other workshops that you all be offering down there that will help on that score?
Yeah, definitely. We have several sessions that deal with officer wellness issues. As you can well imagine, we have engaged in an occupation that comes at some level of personal risk,
mm.
and we deal with a significant stress level. When you look at last year's statistics, the number of people that came under supervision post-conviction increased by 2.5%, and the number of cases entering the pretrial system increased by 6%. Here we are talking about massive budget cuts, and that's likely going to lead to staffing decreases. And as we lose staff, our caseloads are going to explode more and more. And one concern that we all share is that we're going to be under a tremendous amount of pressure with the people that we supervise. And when you consider the fact that a lot of the people entering the system are now sex offenders, there's an incredible amount of sex offenders that are being arrested in the last couple of years compared to years previous. We're just under a lot of pressure. And one thing we want to avoid, I mean, we've lost one officer in the line of duty, but we've also lost a few officers as a result of suicide. So one of our big issues is officer wellness. And that's actually a big issue for the FPPOA president, Barb Oswald. She goes all around the country conducting fit tests for people, and it's really one of her big issues.
So the Training Institute in April in Atlanta, you're going to have a wellness program?
We have speakers that are coming in to talk about wellness. We're also going to have people from the U.S. Sentencing Commission, people come in to do leadership programs, people to put on programs to help officers better relate to the people on probation and pretrial services, supervision, better ways to relate to them, to supervise them. And we actually have the last speaker of the conference is perhaps the most interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the book.
Yeah, that seems fascinating.
Picking Cotton.
Picking Cotton.
Yeah, it's Jennifer Canino and Ronald Cotton. Jennifer, when she was a young woman, was violently raped by an individual whom she identified as Ronald Cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've seen this, I think, either on 2020 or 60 Minutes. I saw both of them interviewed a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It was so powerful.
Yeah, it's really an interesting
She fingered the wrong person.
Yeah, correct. Due to increases in DNA forensics analysis, it was revealed that Ronald Cotton was in fact not the person that raped her.
But he spent like 20 years in jail or something?
Yeah, he was given a lengthy jail sentence, and I think he served 11 years. And after he was exonerated, they actually formed a friendship, and it's from what I've heard, they've spoken at a couple of different conferences, and it's just a really powerful story about the emotions of her being victimized, and then also going through the emotions of knowing that she wrongly accused somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in her mind, it was the person, but it just, you know, it didn't turn out to be the case.
Well, and when you think about what, you know, sort of what it signifies with your association and your agencies, it really, you know, we started the show, we said, take us through, you know, from cradle to grave, you know, how it goes through to pretrial and probation, sort of the same thing with them. You know, I mean, they're going through the whole process.
Yeah,
you know,
wrongly.
Well,
it didn't work out for them. It's interesting, and they're gonna be your keynote speakers last day of the conference, based upon the book about them,
mm-hmm.
And that's your last day of the conference, right?
That's correct.
And for listeners who are interested in learning more about your conference and possibly attending, is that information posted on your website?
Yeah, absolutely. It's right on the homepage. Just click on the link for the NTI.
Okay, so John, I want to thank you for joining us on Fed Talk, and it was very informative, and we hope you'll join us again.
We got to get John back.
We hope that your association will join us again, and we really want to thank you for coming on and for all the good work you do.
Yeah, it's been our pleasure. Thanks for inviting us.
Okay, for our listeners, we're going to take our mid-show break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees year 7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, worldwide on federalnewsradio.com, and your source for federal news now.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and I'm co-hosting Fed Talk this morning with Tony Vernetti, who's the president of Federal Employee Defense Services, otherwise known as FEDS. Tony also was an attorney at our law firm, and it's always nice to have Tony back co-hosting the show with me. I know Tony wanted to join me this morning because, as I said at the beginning of our show, we have two employee associations on that we've never had on our show before, and Fed Talk has been on the air for over 15 years. So it's always fun to have new employee associations on our show, but it's a whole different branch of government. For most of our listeners, you're all in the executive branch, and here we are today talking with members of associations who work in the judiciary, the forgotten branch, I think. I think I'm going to dub it the forgotten branch, because we all know about Congress. Anyway, this half of our show, we're going to be speaking with the president-elect of the Federal Court Clerks Association, and I believe she's on the line with us. We have Pat McNutt on the line. Pat?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Great. Thank you for being on our show. Good morning, and welcome to Fed Talk.
We're very excited to be here.
And as I said to our listeners, this is your first time on Fed Talk, you personally and your association, the Federal Court Clerks Association. And I thought that initially you could just let our listeners, who are mostly executive branch employees, Pat, if you could tell our listeners who your members are, what kind of work do they do, and where do they do that work?
The members of the Federal Court Clerks Association are employees of the federal judiciary, and they actually are employees of all of the different units in the federal judiciary. You had the previous guest who was with the probation and pretrial services unit. So, but we also have, our organization has employees from that unit of the federal judiciary in our organization. We have clerks and deputy clerks of the district courts and the bankruptcy courts. We have employees of the Circuit Court of Appeals in our membership. So our organization is open to all federal court employees, and also employees of the Administrative Office of the United States Courts and the Federal Judicial Center. So we're a comprehensive organization.
And Pat, our folks, we would joke, we kept calling the different branches of government Article 1, 2, and 3, but to be technical, are the Article 1 courts, those clerks, are they eligible to be a part of your association as well?
Yes, they are. Of course, bankruptcy judges are Article 1
right.
judges, and also the Court of Veteran Claims.
Court of Veterans. I clerked there.
Yes. Right.
Oh, he only wanted you to say that so he could say that he worked there.
Well, the only reason I want to say that, because that was the last time there was a furlough when I clerked there.
Is that right? Well, right. No, we actually have members. Actually, on our board, we have Ann Stigles is with the Court of Veteran Claims, and she is one of our board members.
So, oh, wonderful.
Yes.
No, and I think, you know what? Tony makes a good point. I was pigeonholing you into sort of one branch of government, and that's not correct. I'm sure a large part of people who go to work in a court system go into the judiciary court system, but you do have Article 1 employees also, and I think it's important for people who are listening and interested in your association to realize that you don't have to be an employee of the judiciary to join your association.
Well, actually, they would be. Those, we consider them employees of the federal judiciary,
right.
But we
mm-hmm.
also allow former employees of the judiciary to be members and retired employees of the judiciary to be members. Mainly, we want people who support the goals and the mission of the Federal Court Clerks Association.
And, you know, I, of course, have been online on your website in preparation for the show, but since you're the president-elect, correct?
That's correct.
Which to me means you've obviously been active in the association for a while in order to get into that position. And for people who are listening who might be interested in joining your association, can you give us a thumbnail of what your association's about, what do you do, what have you accomplished, and a pitch, why should people join?
Okay. Well, the purpose of our organization is to promote professionalism and integrity of the federal judiciary, and we also provide training opportunities for employees, or members rather, at annual conferences. That's one of our key educational activities, is our annual conference. We also provide a journal that has articles of interest on topics that employees of the federal courts would be interested in, and we also provide information about various FCCA programs. The president of the FCCA is a member of the District Clerks Advisory Group, which is a group within the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts that looks at issues that are, you know, key issues that affect the district courts. And so our president is on that group, and that helps us stay abreast of things that are important to all our members. And we support the independence of the judiciary. It's interesting that you mentioned that the judiciary was the forgotten branch of government.
I think on our show it is, Pat. I think at least on our show. I mean, in this town, when you talk about federal employees, they're really talking about one branch of government. They're talking about the executive branch. They're not talking about Congress.
Listen, Pat, she had to pull out the Constitution this morning to find out where Article 3 was.
Yeah.
Well, we are the third branch of government, and we do, you know, it is that one of the missions of the judiciary and one of the core values is the ability to render justice without fear that decisions of the court may be threatened by, you know, by issues of tenure or compensation or security.
Politics,
politics. So our organization supports the independence of the federal judiciary. But we offer, I think, many things besides the educational program and the journal. We have a partnership with Michigan State University to offer credits towards a certificate in judicial administration, and those credits can be obtained through courses at the annual conference or online.
Wow.
And they can, person who signs up for those courses also can work towards a credit-bearing certificate and receive 12 credit hours that could apply to the MSU's Master in Judicial Administration, or they could apply it towards a bachelor's degree at another university. Of course, that all depends on, you know, how the university accepts different credits. And then again, they offer this master's degree in criminal justice, and they can get a start on that through these courses that we offer at the annual conference. Then we have various awards programs. We have a scholarship program. It's a nominal amount, $500, but that would, we give four each year, and that would pay for tuition to attend or registration fee to attend the FCCA conference, or if they had a course, some sort of college course or other course that they felt was they needed for their to improve their professionalism, then that they could use the $500 for that purpose.
And you know, Pat, you minimize the $500, but I think in today's economy, you know, $500 is a lot more to people today than it was, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. So,
and that's true.
You know, and particularly if you're going and getting coursework at your you know, community college or state university, and it's in, you know, the non-degree programs, it's certainly.
Well, it may be the whole reason you take that course.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I got the scholarship money, and we're going to put it to good use.
Yeah, let's not minimize it, Pat.
Right.
Well, very good. I know. As soon as I said that, I thought, oh, dear, I'm bad. That's my bad. Let's strike that.
I'm sure in many of your districts, the 94 districts where you're, and in the courts of appeals where your members and employees sit, you know, $500 in their local communities for coursework probably gets the job done.
Yes, I think so. And like you say, they can take any course that helps promote them in their position or make them a better employee. And so it can be any kind of college course or another type of course. It doesn't have to be a credit course. So yes, it's a great benefit, and we do have every year have a number of people who apply for those for that scholarship. Then we have a number of awards, and several of these awards are named for people that demonstrated these characteristics in their work with the courts and they died untimely deaths, and we named awards in their honor. So one of those is the Ross Levy Award, and that award we give annually to a deputy clerk who exemplifies great performance in their position, and that's a $200 award. Then we have an Angie Award that was named in honor of a former clerk of court, Angelo Lacasio.
In New Jersey, I read.
In New Jersey, yeah. And he The award is given to someone who tirelessly is committed to improving the administration of justice and fearlessly pursues their causes and goals, regardless of popularity, and also has unblemished integrity. And they are given a plaque. We have an article in our journal about them. And then also the original award is in the New Jersey court, and their name, whoever receives this award, their name is engraved on that original award. Then we have our big award is the FCCA Foundation Dwight D. Opperman Public Service Award, and it's given to a deputy clerk who consistently renders extraordinary service to the public. It is not given every year, but whenever we find a deputy clerk who has done that and the person is nominated and a decision is made, they are given an award of $1,500. This award is funded through an endowment by the Dwight D. Opperman Foundation. Mm. And Mr. Opperman was the chairman and CEO of the West Publishing Company. So that that is, you know, a very important award, but it is not given every year. And then we have FCCA Special Service Awards that we give for outstanding service to the FCCA. And that's like a plaque or actually more like a paperweight with the person's name engraved in Special Service Award.
You know, it's nice to be recognized when you...
It really is.
It's nice to be recognized, Pat. And I'm sure your members of your association, it also helps instill camaraderie. And I think when people go to work, camaraderie and good morale is always important. But I think particularly as we head into these budget issues for feds, I think it's going to become even more important to find a way to get morale and camaraderie that's short of, you know, compensation. We need to take a break. And Pat, when we come back, I want to talk with you about some of the compensation issues facing your folks, along with, I know you also do an upcoming conference.
Right.
But we do need to take a break. We'll talk with Pat McNutt of the Federal Court Clerks Association when we return. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting today's show, and with me in the studio is Tony Vernetti, who is the president of Federal Employee Defense Services, FEDS. You can go to his website, Federal Employee Defense Services. FEDS is a company that offers professional liability insurance to federal employees, including employees not just in the executive branch, but all branches of government. And we have a few minutes, the last part of our show. We've been talking with Pat McNutt, who's the president-elect of the Federal Court Clerks Association. And, Pat, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for staying on the phone, Pat.
Pat, I have a quick question. I wonder if you could just outline for our listeners a little bit about the operations of a federal court. These employees who you represent, what are they doing day to day? I think most people think of a federal court. They think of, you know,
courtrooms, judges.
They think of a judge,
right.
You know, and they don't know that there's all this other stuff, you know, that's going on to process a case in a courthouse. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, a court is much like a large or small business, depending on how large the court is. But as you say, of course, our mission is to support the judge in the administration of justice, to provide a fair and impartial hearing to the people who come to court. And in doing that, we have what we call deputy clerks, who are responsible for the filing of papers. Now, as you, I'm sure you know, we have electronic filing now.
Yes, but so, when I started, you did not.
No, and that's very true. And I also...
And everybody remembers, like, going down to the courthouse at, like, you know, 10 minutes before midnight to get it time-stamped that you're... filing was, like, on time.
Right.
And now we don't have to leave our offices, Pat. We're very happy.
Do you love that?
I love it. Yes. I love electronic filing.
Well, I think all attorneys do. I think there was a lot of trepidation at first, but that has been very successful. Still, though...
Everybody loves it, Pat.
Good. I'm glad. And it's, you know, we improve it all the time.
And of course, for new lawyers, they have no idea. So they don't know to love it. They just do it. Because they've never been sent down to the courthouse, like in a taxi, wherever jurisdiction you're in, you're running to the courthouse to get it date stamped or time stamped.
I used to come back at midnight with my forehead date stamped to prove to my boss that I filed it on time.
Well, I know. Those days are gone.
And I must say that the system very rapidly, your electronic filing system very rapidly became just like so user-friendly and so reliable.
Yes. Well, hey, I love to hear all those comments because we keep the administrative office of the courts is, of course, is very instrumental in continuing to improve the product. So, you know, hopefully they're listening and they're hearing these great comments about their system. But anyway, the clerks still have to, we have to do what we call quality assurance, and we also have to file the judges' opinions and orders. So we still do, you know, file it ourselves electronically, and we also have to do what we call quality control to make sure the attorneys have filed their documents properly. So we still have deputy clerks who are responsible for the filing, the handling of the record, and of course we maintain the record. The electronic record is the record now. We, of course, as you know, have courtroom deputies who support the judge in court, call the cases, and swear the witnesses and take care of the needs of the judge during the hearing. We have also, we conduct naturalization ceremonies, so we have...
Which are one of my favorite things to say.
And that's what, and judges love that as
well. I love them.
Yes, they love those. So we have people that handle those and also attorney admission ceremonies. So that is the part of the court that we call operations. And so that is where the, you know, day-to-day work for the, to administer justice occurs. But as any business, we have all sorts of support staff, and you would imagine now that with electronic filing, we have to have really good IT people.
Mm-hmm.
So we have IT staff that manage, of course, all of our computers that we use for our daily work and also administer the CMECF system. And then we have financial staff because we do, as you know, take in fees and we have payments that people pay into court, and so we have a financial staff that tracks all of those payments and remits them to the Treasury. And we, of course, have to manage a budget because we have to operate our office, and so we manage a budget. And then we have other administrative personnel, like a human resources person. Just like every business, we have human resource issues and time and attendance and leave and all of that. And so we have human resources staff. And the larger your court, I'm in the Eastern District of Tennessee, and our court is, we have like 47 employees in the clerk's office, and about, if you count all of the law clerks and judges and judicial assistants, we have about 100 you know, people that are employed by the federal judiciary. So we, again, the clerk's office provides the support for all of the staff and addresses any needs that they have, computer needs, HR needs, that sort of thing. So that's just a thumbnail sketch of what a court does, but it all, you know, there's much larger courts, of course.
They're just pushing more paper.
Right.
And they
They're responsible for the entire operation of the court.
Yeah.
Right. That's what the clerk's office taken care of.
Yeah, and I think for our listeners, I mean, for lawyers, we know what the clerk's office is all about. The clerk's office is about, for mostly, is the creation and maintaining of the official record of the case. And
right.
in our judicial system, in our process, the record is gold because that's how judges decide and juries decide cases. It's what's in the record. And if, and on appeal, that's what the Court of Appeals is looking at. And so it's so important to litigants, whether they be in the civil process, the criminal process, to have an accurate record maintained, accessible to all. And, of course, we know that's what court clerks do.
Right.
Now, Pat, we only have a few more minutes left with you, and I was hoping you could let our listeners know, for people who might be interested in your association, how do they join?
Well, on our website, there is a area for membership, and it explains the procedures for membership, and they can click on the member. I don't have my website pulled up here, but they can click on that and go to our member clicks service, and they can register online.
And what's your membership fee?
Well, it varies. For deputy clerks, it's $20.
Very affordable.
Yes. And for chief deputy clerks, it's $50. And for clerks, it's $75.
So you have a sliding scale.
Right.
And your association also, we have about 2 minutes left. Your association also is running a conference this year. It's June in Mobile, Alabama. Is it open to non-members?
No, our conferences are open only to members. So if they weren't a member now, they would need to join before they registered for the conference. I mean, the conference is, this is our 83rd conference. The FCCA was formed in 1922, and the conferences have only been interrupted because of war years. So this is our 83rd conference, and this is for our members to get educational opportunities that they don't get otherwise. We provide a full-scale educational program that covers everything from leadership and management to how to handle courtroom issues, just a very broad program, finance issues, human resources issues. We try to provide a program that would appeal and apply to all of the positions in the federal court.
Yeah, I looked at your
agenda.
Yeah, thank you. And it's professional development for all aspects of court clerks. And but you do have to be a member of the association to join. I mean, to attend the conference.
To attend the conference, it is that is something we offer for our members, and the FCCA puts on these conferences. With the help, the courts will host a conference, and those FCCA members in that court, plus the national FCCA organization, work together to create the agenda to get the speakers to develop the program. So,
we need to send our listeners to your website for more information about your conference, and we want to thank you very much, Pat, for joining us on our show, and we hope, Pat, that you and your association will join us again on Fed Talk.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.